Blog Talk Radio.
The Sound Health Options Show with Richard Talk To Me Guy and Sherry Edwards. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning. Good morning. It is an awesome morning, Richard. So much is happening in the world. Good stuff. Great stuff. Horrible stuff. Let's just talk about the good stuff today.
I'm for that.
Well, we're going to have on one of our regular guests that we really love, Dr. John Apsley, and he's going to talk to us about radiation. What is it? Where does it come from? How does it affect our bodies and what we personally can do about it, even though the government is really ignoring the whole problem as far as I can see. They just upped the limits of what's safe, hoping they didn't have to do anything about it.
It really does. I can't help myself just because you said that. I have to jump in and say that it is so, and I'm certain, John, this is kind of coming from also our show last week with John Perkins, the new Confessions of the Economic Hitman, is that it just stuns me that that's kind of seems to be the game, is raise the levels of what is okay, and really the whole game seems to be, let's not damage the machine that is printing money out of everything that's occurring. Now we can go back to happy.
One of the things I don't get about all of it is the people who are in power, so to speak, think we're so stupid we don't see the difference. And Dr. Apsley is going to bring us some of those statistics of what happened with Chernobyl and how long it took to bring that information out and see the results. Then the same thing with Fukushima. And then I'm hoping he's going to talk about other kinds of radiation cell phones where we've traded convenience for giving ourselves cancer. There's a call center near here, and we've had a couple of people come in from there, and they have this purple cancer line on their face from their ear to their mouth, right where that headset was, and they got skin cancer. And I'm wondering, too, if we can ask our guests why some people get cancer and some people don't. But we've got some housekeeping things we need to do first. So let's let people know that we are being simultaneously broadcast audio over at Blog Talk Radio, and then audio and video. What do you call that, a podcast?
You're actually doing what I call a video feed over at WebEx. So Sherry has, I'll jump on that for just a second. So Sherry's over there managing the WebEx feed, which means that she has a lively chat and pages that will show that she'll show while we're talking about things. And to get to either of those, either to Sherry or myself on Blog Talk Radio, you can go to soundhealthoptions.com, click on the radio tab, and for today's show, click on Blog Talk Radio, and then down there on the right-hand side is a link either to Blog Talk Radio or to the call-in number at Blog Talk of 347-850-1407. The audio over there is always good. And then also you can see a link to join the WebEx feed so you can see what we're talking about.
And they can just come back and watch or listen to the show or watch the show, because I'm going to put up the video of this too. We're being sponsored by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology and Sound Health, where we stick a microphone in somebody's face and take a sample of their voice and see what's going on, because we know the voice is a holographic representation of what's going on in the brain. So we do have a program called Radiation Exposure that we put up for people. We took this down, and we're only putting it up for a few days now, where people can download this Radiation Exposure software along with information and tools on how to use it to see if they have been exposed to radiation. This one is mainly for Fukushima. There's another one, Radiation Plus, that deals with x-rays and airplanes even that have radiation. So we will be learning more and more about that. Do you have any announcements, Richard, before we ask Dr. Apsley to come on board?
I do. I'm sending you the link now in Skype so that you can put that up if you'd like. This is a win-win story for me. There's a company in Northern California called Real Goods that was the first company in the United States to ever sell a solar panel back when solar power costed about $1 per watt versus now I think it's down to like half a cent per watt. And it was founded by John Schaefer and partners, and I believe his wife. And he had started it in the 80s, and then at some point, I'm not sure exactly when, I'll say in the late 90s, somebody offered him a grip of cash to buy it and still be involved, but to, you know, buy him out. And he took that opportunity because he'd been doing it for years. And then another opportunity rolled back around because he still lived in the same area. It's in Hopland, California. And he had the opportunity to buy the property back because it had been kind of let be run down and, you know, just not be taken care of properly. And so he bought it back and is restoring it and is celebrating its 30th year this particular weekend. And it's a property where you have demonstration sites. I mean, they do sell products, but it's really a demonstration property where they have, you know, show you to have solar-powered everything, and how they show you to do aquaponics and, you know, do every kind of alternative permaculture, why you want to make manure teas. He's a large training facility where they have interns come in and learn all of these things and see all these things in real time. I mean, they're actually doing it on the property and show people how to... Go ahead.
You were inviting us out to go with you to this event?
This would be fabulous. That would be an amazing event, yes. He's actually putting on the event this weekend for free, charging nobody anything to come and see this, an amazing gathering of people and speakers. And it is considered to be it's about an hour and a half north of San Francisco, and it's now considered to be the number one destination location between San Francisco, well, between Sonoma County, which is where I am, and I would say Ukiah, I'm not sure, but I mean, they have millions of people stop there every year, and they just added this year, they've just put up, actually, it's the grand opening this weekend, they're starting a company on the property called Emerald Farms, which is, I'm not sure how Martin Lee is involved, and we've interviewed Martin Lee, he's an expert on CBDs and THC, and his project is called ProjectCBD.org, a great resource. They sell nothing at ProjectCBD.org. They just talk about research about the benefits of cannabis. And so they're opening this building on the property, and that picture that you see is of the building, and it's going to be the first, it's known now as the first solar-powered cannabis dispensary in the United States, because the entire property is solar-powered, and so this building was easy to add on because they didn't have to run power lines or anything because everything is solar-powered. So I just think it's a fabulous, it's a beautiful property. As you can see from the photographs, the entire property looked like that with, you know, lavender labyrinths and walks, and, you know, I just think it's such a positive statement about, look, this can really happen. The first seller of the solar panel in the United States can, you know, regenerate and come back.
I'd like to get more people on about solar power because there's so many warnings on the internet that if the grid goes down, we're all going to go down. We can't communicate. And if we all had our own solar power, I think we could stay in touch. So would you work on that, getting somebody
that... I will.
That,
yes, I'd love to.
Tell us how to be self-sufficient.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful place, and the idea of solar, you know, no matter what you're growing, is a good idea. Okay, I have one little announcement, a fun one. 40 interesting facts about the human body. I will put the link in the chat. Richard can transfer that over to the Blog Talk, but just things like 300 billion new cells are produced every day. 300 million old cells die every minute. So how can we keep up with that if we're having all of this pollution and 300 billion new cells every day, 300 million die every minute? So I'm hoping our guest will tell us how to turn that around. I'm not particularly looking for, I want to live to be 500, but I want to be in good health. So with that said, Richard, would you introduce our guest, which probably doesn't need much introduction. He's been with us before, and he's a favorite.
I'll give a brief introduction because it's always good for people to hear this kind of information. I love this intro. No one really knows the exact number of cells in our body, but what we do know is that the rate of cellular degeneration is accelerating, especially brain cells. How can we nutritionally counter the pollution from radiation, big pharma, big ag, and big money so that we can live long and prosper? Dr. John Apsley is a multi-degreed medical researcher who has developed a regenerative lifestyle protocol that will allow us to gracefully face the daily assaults on our health. Dr. Apsley has studied long-lived cultures and has proven that our life expectancy has grown in years. However, our quality of life has not. Dr. Apsley joins us to discuss the pillars to lasting regeneration and other ideas. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning. It's always a great pleasure to be with you both.
I have an opening question. Is that okay, Sherry?
Yes, I was just going to say, where are we going to start? This is so big.
I have my leading question is, when my grandfather died in the 70s, in his late 80s of natural causes, was he more than likely in better overall health than a 50-year-old male today?
It's a great question. Let's give some frame of reference for everyone as to how it works with why some people live long and are healthier when they live longer compared to the average American, which may live long up to the age of 80, but has been sick for the last 30 years of their life and on lots of medication. The human system is dependent upon minerals, special kinds of minerals that we get from our foods. And I just got back from Hawaii, and Hawaii are islands that are based upon volcanic spewing out of lava. And when that breaks down into very tiny particles of minerals, the growth is just fabulous. And when you go from place to place where the minerals have been run down, the life just can't happen. So it begins to not only show itself in lack of life in the soil, but also lack of life in the ocean. So the interglacial time periods where we have great temperatures for life to take off here on the planet are opposed to their opposite, where the glaciers are prevalent around the Earth and they're pounding with their pressure and their weight on the Earth to grind rock into a flour-like mineral base. And this cycle of glaciation and temperate times has a ratio of about 90,000 years of glaciers occupying most of the Earth, and only 10,000 years of the time when we have really great times for populations to grow and the temperatures get real seasonal, real nice. Well, we're at the end of this cycle, and so there's a lot of talk today about glacial warming, and there used to be a lot of talk about glacial cooling, but really they're part of the same system. I'll give you an example. So we had dust bowls here in the 30s where the methods for doing agriculture were not very smart, and so a lot of the topsoil was just whisked away during storms, and a lot of that fertility of the soil was lost. Well, China is doing this, a lot of the same bad techniques in their growing technology. And I was reading an article about 10 years ago put out by the University of Washington where they had crews that were out in the Pacific that had been monitoring the life in a large section of the Pacific Ocean for about 30 years. They were keeping track of it, and they noted that over 30 years, this huge span of ocean had lost 70% of its life. And the term they used was biomass. And while they were there during this report, they were all out there. It was a good time of year for them to continue their studies. This dust bowl from China landed in their exact vicinity. And within 3 weeks, the biomass of that region of ocean went 100% back to normal, what it was 30 years prior. So that's how fast that life comes back, because minerals is what governs the life on the planet, and it's essential for how we operate it at body temperatures. Unfortunately, physicians are taught biochemistry and organic chemistry that has a lot to do with salt chemistry, and that kind of mineral interplay requires that minerals are dissolved in water, which is not how life happens. Life happens by minerals being suspended in water, and they start vibrating. They have vibrations, and this is where Sherry Edwards' work is vital to the planet. The minerals have a relationship of vibration that have an interface with select amino acids inside the cells of our body, our DNA, our RNA, basically enzymes. And this relationship is a frequency of the minerals coming into the folds of the amino acid or the enzyme and then being repelled and then coming back and then being repelled and then coming back. It's a positive-negative attraction that when all the positives rush into all the negatives of these select kinds of protein structures inside the cell, they get too close to each other, the positives do, and so they repel. But they get reattracted because the protein strands are negatively charged. So they pull them back in again. And this harmonic, this frequency, is what governs life. And it happens at very rapid speeds. And life happens because of the harmony between tiny minerals in the full spectrum, all of the different minerals that are healthy for us, are coming together and having a relationship to the negatively charged structure inside the cells of our body, including our DNA. Well, radiation and carcinogens and pollutants interfere with this harmonic. They get in there, they insert themselves, they displace the good guys, and they begin to form this attraction-repulsion at frequencies and harmonies that Sherry Edwards' technology is able to measure. It can detect it like a fingerprint, that there's a certain carcinogen or a certain particle of lead, a certain amount of lead in the system, or in the case of radiation particles, which is radioactive lead, basically. Sound technology can detect that there is pollution of these toxic minerals, radioactive minerals, inside the cells of the body. So the solution is similar to what happened when the scientists were observing the ocean that had depleted itself of life, because algae basically governs the weather pattern. They're in the top 3 feet of the ocean, and they are absolutely dependent upon these minerals that they get from the runoff that rains deliver through, like, the mighty Mississippi, for example, into the Delta regions, into the Gulf of Mexico, where everything breeds. All the fish come there because all the algae's there. All the krill and the tiny crustaceans come because the algae's there, which the tiny fish eat, because the minerals. The minerals are being washed into the rivers that eventually go into the oceans, and we've exhausted that on the planet. Some of the most sophisticated studies in agriculture since the 1990s have noted that basically all of the land masses have washed away their super mineral content that they got at the beginning of the glacial period that ended about 10,000 years ago. So we replenish the Earth now by this glacial pressure down upon hard rock that is pulverized into a powder, and that's where the food chain starts. And when there's an abundance of this, the carbon in the atmosphere winds up in the bodies of the living creatures, both the algae and the ocean. As I said, that's the main force that controls the weather patterns. That's the reservoir carbon, as well as the soil, which starts the food chain for the land masses. So that's exhausted. So that's number one. We're looking at causal ways in which that we either live long and prosper and we're healthy until we die at the age of 90 or 100 or 110, or the ways in which that, because those minerals are missing, that we wind up becoming crippled by the time we're 50 and we start needing to be on all kinds of different drugs to keep ourselves going, and we stay miserable for the last 20 years of our life. So with that in mind, we can talk about how radiation, we can talk about how these carcinogens that we're polluting ourselves with, we can talk about that the brains of these people that are doing this to us, the people involved with nuclear power, the people involved with polluting the environment, they're not thinking properly. They don't have the moral stamina to be able to say to themselves with proper thoughts that are governed by these mineral systems and enzyme systems, you know, my act of harming a whole bunch of different people isn't worth the fact that I'm making huge profits. And because they're not thinking properly, the God Almighty dollar becomes the most important thing rather than the human welfare of living long and prospering in great health. The reason why I can say that is because for the last almost 40 years now, I've been observing the 30 cultures of long-living people, observing their moral conduct that they exemplify, also examining their soils and the way that they grow their foods. And they're always around mineral-rich sources from either old volcanic activity or through other systems that involve glaciers that make this mineral available to their soils. And they don't start their aging process until they're 90. And they don't have issues of radiation. They don't have issues of pollution unless we somehow bring it into their local areas. So that's our standard, and we can see their behavior, how they treat each other. They feel differently than we do. They feel a harmony with the environment. They know when someone's in trouble in their clan, they feel instant need to go help them. Well, we've been depressed because our brain systems and our indeed every activity inside our bodies are depleted to be able to even have empathy, which requires these mineral systems to produce neurotransmitters so that we think and we feel that we're causing great goodness with our immediate people around us, our family, ourselves, our neighbors, or we dumb ourselves down and we don't feel that we're causing harm, and we're trying to find another value system that gives us meaning to work and to continue on life, and that becomes the God Almighty dollar. So it's a decay. And although that Sherry Edwards technology can expose it, the things to do about it are at this causal level. We have to remove these different pollutants from our body, which can be done. We have to put the minerals in their proper form, which we get from fruits and vegetables and even from other sources of foods that are grown in healthy soils and with an abundance of minerals. And because we're so degenerate from the time of your grandfather that you were referring to, who was indeed, if he came from a farm that was a healthy soil, he was a superior human being to those kids that are growing up today eating junk food. We have to reverse this generational deficiency to come back to where we were. And my work, in summary, has been about how can we take the most degenerate people that are on the planet right now, my patients or my colleagues who have patients, and how can they bring suddenly these very sick people back to where we're extremely healthy again. That's been the substance of my research for almost 40 years.
Which is amazing and exciting. That's why we love having you on, because you're possessed about it. And I like my researchers possessed by it. I have, speaking of the God Almighty Dollar, what has your research looked at the effect of glyphosate and mineral content in soils?
Yes, Jeffrey Smith and I are in touch quite a bit, and we just had Arnie Gunderson and Maggie Gunderson over for dinner last night. Actually, they took us out to dinner, and the two are related, because on the one hand, you had this pesticide that was effective for killing every plant, including weeds, but it wasn't useful for growing agricultural meaningful crops like corn and soy and cotton crops and so on and so forth. So the scientists were charged by the industry to go looking for some life form that could survive this pesticide, and they found a certain kind of bacteria that was still thriving, even though it was being bathed in this pesticide. And they took those genes and started sticking them inside corn and soy and cotton and now potatoes and tomatoes and so on and so forth. Frankenstein foods, we call them. And lo and behold, those particular plants were eventually, it was figured out that they could survive while this pesticide was used that would prevent every other plant from absorbing the minerals from the soil, which is the basis of life. The chemistry of life comes from these minerals in the soil being absorbed into plants, and then animals would eat those. So they had created all these crops that at a very, very superficial level didn't have radically different value systems of nutrient content from normal tomatoes and potatoes and soy and corn. But when the studies were done, they stopped the studies of the animals being fed it to test to see whether it was safe or not at approximately the 3-month mark. These extremely best of the best scientists that were purchased, these scientists that were purchased by the industry to prove that their foods are okay, stopped their studies on purpose at about the 90-day mark of the animals being fed the food. And the animals looked like they were hanging in there. They were doing okay, and they were compared to others, and they looked like they were just normal. But then the scientists who questioned that, who weren't being paid by the industry that was propagating these Frankensteinian foods, GMO foods, gene-modified organism foods, they somehow got together and they got some funding and they carried on the experiment, not for 3 months, not for 6 months, but at least for 9 months and beyond. And lo and behold, the longer that the foods were being fed to the animals, the more sicknesses that developed. And, of course, everyone would understand that. Minerals they cause the chemistry of life to occur. And the minerals have to be in a special form, the way that the long-lived people eat their foods and grow their foods. And so these animals that were being fed these Frankensteinian foods developed all gruesome kinds of different diseases, and cancers were prevalent in about 70% of them at about the 9-month mark. And that was way beyond what they would expect with animals of that age that were grown with non-GMO foods. Well, then the real tussle began, because there was basically an unlimited amount of money on the industry that was making all the money by selling this crap. And the scientists who were didn't have that much funding, but were sincere and truthful. And then there was this tussle of propaganda that went back and forth, just like we're seeing in the nuclear power industry. Nuclear power is safe. We can raise the limits. GMO foods are safe. You can eat all you want. Because of the God Almighty dollar attachment, these people don't feel like we do. They don't have the actual sensations in their body of empathy. So they just are after making money. These are people who are mostly animals. Animals don't have this kind of empathy for each other. A lot of people will say, well, you know, I have pets that love me and all. I'm not talking about those. I'm talking about the brutal world of animalistic behavior of animals that eat other animals. A tiger doesn't have empathy for the deer that it's caught by the throat and is choking it off and eating it. These people are so hungry and they lack the empathy that they don't let anything get in their way of thought to stop them from causing massive harm to our culture. So rather than being a victim, and Sherry Edwards started off the occasion, I think, on a good note, let's be positive, we have to first recognize what the problem is, and then we have to develop the ability to protect ourselves and then protect our family and then protect our neighbor. We get this empathy back if we don't already still maintain it, because there are people who do. And the empathy is a sensation that takes place inside the body. It's a good, healthy feeling of, I want to help other people. I want to help and do good things to myself. I want to do good things to my family. Fortunately, there's enough of us to still have that, and we know how to expand it. We know how to love each other. We know how to eat properly. A brain that is lacking oxygen, that is lacking sugar, that it uses for fuel, that lacks other nutrients, can't have empathy. And so people then become animalistic. Recently, I gave an example of the old movie Marooned, if anyone remembers back, I think it was in the 70s, with Gregory Peck, the head of NASA, and Gene Hackman was one of the astronauts that was trapped in an Apollo capsule that was orbiting the Earth, and they were running out of oxygen. When the oxygen got low enough and the carbon dioxide started rising, which are both deleterious for the brain function, there were three examples of how the brain reacted. You had one who just started getting giddy and didn't make any sense, and that happens. People get giddy when they lack oxygen and get too much carbon dioxide, and they just lose it. They just get giddy and silly. Another person gets really agitated and angry and also doesn't make any sense. And then the other person who still maintains some sort of thought processes that make sense, the head of the crew in this case, decided to sacrifice himself so that it gave a little bit more time for the other two to possibly be rescued. And that's how the movie ended, that the other two were. So some people think rationally when their brain is deficiency. Others get real giddy and kind of lose it, and others get very agitated and angry. And at that point, you know they need something, but they're reaching out into thin air and they don't have the ability to feed themselves properly. And unfortunately, we have a huge culture today of people who are being so poorly fed, both for their body and their mind and their brain, that they're just reaching out for whatever they can, thinking that this will solve their problem, and it winds up being money. So there's nothing wrong with money. There's nothing wrong with it. But when you lack the ability to have wisdom, or and empathy has a lot of the access to wisdom, when we feel our way properly through a situation, this doesn't cause harm. This does cause harm. I'm going to choose to do no harm. As physicians, that's the oath that we take. Many physicians don't feel empathy for their patients. The best doctors do. Nurses the same way. When patients get better or stay healthy longer with doctors and nurses that have empathy for them, that love them, they can feel it. Love is a nutrient, and these people are so animalistic that because they've lost this empathy, this faculty of mind that's a huge portion of the mind, they just don't have it, and so they don't care, and they default down to something extremely material, like the dollar, because it's the only thing they know of that can keep them going and surviving. And so that's the problem that we're in. Those same people if they were put on a fast, given heavy duty nutrients, given spirulina, they detoxify, they're given super nutrients, they're around people who are warm and compassionate and helping each other, they eventually, many of them would start coming back to their common sense, which is the ability to think rationally while they're feeling their way of what's good and what's bad, as opposed to being told what's good and what's bad. So those people that are basing their experience of how to live on what they think, they can use propaganda without even a second thought. They can say, you know, we can, Abraham Lincoln, they don't say this themselves, Abraham Lincoln said it best, you can fool some of the people some of the time, especially the ones that aren't really, you know, are not very healthy mentally. But you can't fool all of the people all the time. Well, when you have the technology like Sherry Edwards does, it's really clear. You do a voice pattern in some of these politicians, and you can see that they have to defer to lying, to not telling the truth, either because they're ignorant, which is commonplace, or because they're covering up something because they have to get elected the next time around, and their donors are the ones that are going to feed their coffers to get reelected, and some of those people that are funding them are from the nuclear power industry. And this is where the food for what they think they need is coming from this horrible source of taking advantage of other people and the planet. And what's silly and unfortunate and sad is that the same people that are doing this have families, family members, children, fathers, mothers, spouses that are dying of these diseases that are propagated because of the pollutants in our environment. One last thing I'll say here. I had occasion to speak to the top researcher at the National Cancer Institute and National Institutes of Health who was watching the real causation of cancer in this country. We're number 3 in the world, and we go back and forth with Australia and New Zealand, and they have very high rates of sun-based, you know, skin cancer. So that's why the rates are so high. But in America, we get the more lethal kinds of cancer. We're rated at number 3, but really we should be number 1. And he said, and he published this in 2004, and I had talked to him on the phone not too long ago, and he said about almost up to 90% of the cancer in this country is coming from pollution in the environment. 90%. And so I said, well, that's all preventable. That's 100% preventable. And the big story that we have here is that there are a group of scientists in industry and in our government who absolutely know this, and they can't talk about it because they will be fired and they'll lose their livelihood while they're supporting their kids to go through college. And as soon as they retire, they write a book and they say, hey, everybody, I used to be the former director of cancer research studying epidemiology of how it is triggered in different parts of the country. And lo and behold, it's because we're polluting it with this pollutant and that company and that industry. Would you please all listen to me and do something about it? Well, nobody does anything about it. If the president of the United States got up and said, hey, listen, this is the real science right here, we need to change this, well, then you'd have a large number of people who don't have a background in training in science that would say, yeah, let's get behind the president. He or she has just laid out exactly that of the 1.8 million new cancers that are diagnosed in the U.S. each year, at least 200,000 of them are being caused by radiation, and that half of those are being caused by man-made radiation. And the National Academy of Sciences has said, and they have, that there is no safe level of radiation. Zero. National Academy of Sciences, a very honest body of individuals, and yet we have the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, along with the EPA, now raising the limits of allowable radiation exposure, telling us that it's perfectly safe. And, you know, this is our fault. this is the, whoever's listening to me, it's your fault. Because now you have access to shows that are put on by Sherry Edwards where you know the truth, and 90% of the cancer in this country is caused by pollution. So we have to remove that pollution from our bodies. We have to take food sources and water sources and air sources that are not polluted, and we can do this. We teach a seminar several times a year where we have people come in and say, if you live in a polluted city, it's okay. There are techniques you can use, because there are cultures of people that are known that live in polluted cities that live in perfect health to the age of 90. Seventh-day Adventists are an example, those who really practice that discipline in downtown Los Angeles. So most of these long-lived cultures live in pristine environments where the pollution isn't there. But it is possible that we do it in our own homes, even if we live in New York City or L.A. or Chicago. It's possible. And to do it so it's cost-effective. And I can tell you guys that of all of the different systems that are set up to live what I call a regenerative lifestyle, today it's not quite enough. Today we need a trigger, a triggering mechanism, a system that amplifies our ability to self-heal, to regenerate ourselves. And this is where Sherry Edwards technology comes in. These sound frequencies that we can avail ourselves to, they can be determined very precisely exactly what frequencies. Remember, these minerals that cause life to happen have a frequency, a bouncing in and a bouncing out, a bouncing in and a bouncing out. That causes a frequency, a resonance, with the molecules in the cell that cause life to happen. And by giving harmonics in terms of sound waves into those cells, while you're also refeeding, starting to give wholesome nourishment to the individual, those frequencies, those sound waves, those bioacoustics that come in can retweak, can reignite, can reprime, can start up again the proper engines of life within the cells of your body with that assistance, and make it a whole lot easier to get the other nutrients back into the cells that have a lot of other barriers, and can get the pollution that's inside the cell out a lot easier. Drinking a lot of water, doing some detoxification routines, like maybe taking a short fast under supervision, and then doing lots of good exercises. And then people say, well, I don't have enough energy. Well, when you're using sound frequencies properly, it's a lot easier to feel stronger and the desire to exercise, getting that oxygen, the primary nutrient, back into your body. The longest-lived people drink a lot of water each day. They don't have a lot of pollution in their environment. When they get sick, they do fast on their water, which is real special water. It's water that is full of minerals, and it's very wet. It goes into the body easier, and delivers the minerals, and it pulls out toxins a lot easier, mostly in the form of hydrogen. And they do exercise all day long. They just are always going up and down the mountainside, or doing real good work on the earth with farming and sheep and goats and other livelihoods that they might only make $750 a year, U.S., on average, but they have everything. They don't want for anything. Their health is perfect. They don't start their aging process until they're 90. Until they're 90, they don't start their aging process. We have recent examples of Ikara, Greece. Ikara, Greece is an island just off of Greece, and the people there live, they also don't start their aging process until they're about 90, and they love to dance until about 3 a.m. in the morning all together. They all get together about 10 p.m. at the local gathering spots, people that live there, have been raised there, and they start having fun. And they're very productive during the day as well. They drink organic wine in moderation. They eat this incredible food that's on this volcanic island that is just laced with the chemistry of life in a potentized form. And they love music, and they dance. Well, we can return to that feeling aliveness within the sensations of the body by looking to Sherry Edwards' technology with the bioacoustics. It starts us on our way and rapidly propels us in the right direction. We start getting wisdom again, and then we can turn this thing around. Those of us that are listening, we can turn this thing around if we start with ourselves and we understand the pathway. Last thing I want to say about pathway. Scientists and physicians today have references of standards that they use to guide them as to the expectations that they should think of to bring their patients back to health. And those guidelines, those standards, are inferior. They were corrupted. They didn't know it. The longest-lived cultures, the people who don't start their aging process until they're 90, that's the standard. That's the reference point. But in our industrial wisdom, we've used propaganda to say to the world, oh, that really doesn't happen. We did it, especially during the Cold War, when Stalin, who happened to note that there was this 5,000-year-old culture that lived in the Caucasus Mountains of Soviet Georgia, lived to the age of 120. It was on the Muslim calendar, but it still was well over 110 years of the Judeo-Christian calendar. They were Muslim. They were peaceful. Their farms were exuberant. Their animals were super healthy. And they were studied since 1932 to about 1980. And because this was a superior group of people, probably the longest living people on the planet, but they were, that Stalin was trying to use them for propaganda purposes, saying, hey, listen, the Soviet system of communism is great. We have the longest living superior groups of people on the planet. The scientists who were studying them appropriately at Columbia University and other universities, they were given the word from on high in the U.S. government, oh, listen, this is all a bunch of BS. They're really, here's some criticism. You need to accept the criticism. This really isn't happening. And they gave some examples as to why that what the Soviet scientists were saying couldn't possibly be true. Well, I've debunked that. It was pure propaganda. Group of Abkhazians and other groups, there are about 100 different groups, but the Abkhazians were the most advanced. They weren't Soviet. They had been there for 5,000 years. They were a very tight-knit clan of people. They still exist today. And they just had the farmlands that received the mineral-rich glacial melt each spring from the mountains that charged their farms with bacteria that could assimilate these minerals that were tiny enough, ground up by the glaciers, that then formed the perfect fertilizer from the bacteria dying off and releasing their proteins into the soil, the perfect fertilizer, and the plants would take it, and then the animals would eat the plants, and so on and so forth. That's the proper food chain. And these people were exquisite. And then what do? We wash it out because we don't want the American public to believe that, you know, the Soviet way of life is good. That part I don't care about, but the fact that they threw the baby out with the bathwater, that I care about. So scientists and physicians stop studying. How do these Abkhazians live to the age of 140 in some cases, again on the Muslim calendar, but maybe 125 on ours? How do they do that in perfect health? They don't start slowing down until the last 2 years of life. And the studies were enormous with measurements and determinations down to the nth degree to determine that this was reality. Same thing happened with the Hunzikuts, with the Brits studying them inside and outside. And then they were discredited for an incredible reason of ignorance. And then these other cultures, that were able to be shown for sure, like in Ikra, Greece, that they don't start their aging process until they're 90, the propagandists couldn't come after them because the science was so airtight. And so we do have over 30 of these cultures that have that tell us what the real standards are. When we practice medicine based upon that standard of how they do that, we can return ourselves back to the long living that stay thriving right up into the last 2 years of our life, way after we're 100 years of age. But we have to know exactly what we're doing, and the bioacoustics is a massive triggering device that can propel us to get back there quicker than if we don't have it. So that's what I want to say.
Well, you talk about on your site about the pillars of how we can do it. Can you share that?
Sure. All these long-living cultures, they live a daily regenerative lifestyle. That's my term. They have a detoxification program that they do every day, mostly centered around drinking really high-quality water. It's full of minerals, lots of it. They get lots of physical fitness exercise to get the primary nutrient into all the cells of their body, even if they're 90 years of age, it's oxygen. They eat regenerative nourishment. This food that they eat, I've been studying that most intensely. It's very, very high in regenerative factors, mostly because that the soil is so fertile. But there are select foods that have more of this regenerative factor in it than other foods. And these foods that are mostly regenerative are embryonic foods. There are certain, these are cows that give their milk that are eating this incredibly healthy, mineral-rich soil that they're grazing on it each day, or goats or sheep, that then make their milk extremely superior, and it's raw milk. The animals aren't sick. So why, you know, mother's breast milk is never pasteurized, but we have this fetish that milk has to be pasteurized. Well, in a way, that's good today because the cows are so darn sick. The commercial cows are so darn sick. And the American dairy industry hates when anyone comes forward with that information. We have to pasteurize the milk here in this country because it's so filled with bacteria because the cows are so sick. But where the cows and the goats and the sheep are raised in super healthy soil, they're not sick. And drinking that kind of milk is just perfect. So that kind of regenerative nourishment, nuts and seeds, the Abkhazians really love their chestnuts and their walnuts. And today we know that walnuts are incredibly nutritious, especially for the heart. We know that sprouts, the Hunzikuts were really big on taking chickpeas and sprouting it overnight and eating one-day-old sprouts of chickpeas. That was one of their favorite foods. But also a lot of their foods, and elsewhere too, like in Abkhazia, these foods are very high in latrol, and latrol is just 60% of the main staffs of life. It's everywhere. It's a form of healthy cyanide. It's a special kind of cyanide that kills cancer cells. And when Sloan Kettering did the study, was charged by Congress to study latrol back in the late 70s and early 80s, they lied about it. They said it didn't work. When it did. And it wasn't until after all the fanfare was announced in all the major national newspapers that latrol didn't work, did somebody on the inside of Sloan Kettering smuggle out the actual research that said that it did work. But by then, the American public had been distracted by the propaganda of the lie. Propaganda is lying. It's the art of lying, by the way, created by the Woodrow Wilson administration back in 1917, 1916, to get America into World War I, which the Nazis then used 20 years later to almost perfection. So now it's part of industry. Now it's part of how you do commercials on TV and newspaper writing and article writing so that you can get the public to believe lies. It's an art form. So at any rate, this is the whole scheme of how it actually does work. It's the minerals in the soil, not pollutants. It's the water that comes from on high or that sometimes comes from underground. It's the exercise, and it's these embryonic foods that are grown in this water and in this soil that then are sprouted, or they're embryonic, they're eggs, they're fermented foods, they're nuts and seeds, or they're organ parts of animals. The Eskimos is a good example of the Inuits, we call them today. He who eats it raw. That's why we use the term Eskimo. It was our term that we gave to the Inuits, but it meant something very important. He who eats it raw. Because once you cook these embryonic foods, they lose their ability to regenerate vital parts within the human body. You don't have to eat everything raw, and it doesn't have to all be vegetables. Eating a vegan diet can be extremely beneficial to detoxify the body and to do all kinds of health rebuilding. But there are cultures that live extremely long that also eat animal parts, but they, particularly the organs, where the embryonic factors are still stored, even in animals that are 2 or 3 years old, and they're not cooked very much. And then there are parts of the bone and the bone marrow that are cooked to get the oils out, and this has been perfected over 5,000 years, whether the society was mostly lacto-ovo-vegetarian or whether they were mostly meat-eaters, the embryonic foods were the highlight of their particular diet, and it rapidly brings people back to health. And then the fourth pillar is the attitude. It's the mental attitude. It's spiritual. It is things that are felt, that you can feel the love for your family and your culture and your environment. It's a positive attitude that works with you to go through the trials and tribulations of life. If you break your leg or something, you have a positive attitude. Or if somebody in the neighborhood gets hurt, everyone descends upon that person to help them. That's a feeling. That's the fourth pillar. It's very spiritual. It's wanting others to be healthy and to thrive. And it becomes a great joy. It's experienced as joy that I've helped my children to become better than I. I've helped my neighbor who was in dire need. In my culture, my neighbors have helped me. I'm so grateful. That's fourth pillar. So that whole four-pillar structure sometimes, probably more times than not, gets assistance from certain energies that are in a local environment. It can start with the minerals themselves. We don't have to get into that today, but when you meet someone like a Sherry Edwards who has had gifts given to her and she has picked up on a huge piece of that pie of how energy can immediately uplift a degenerate situation, a biologically degenerate situation because it's lacking certain frequencies, certain resonances because of lack of minerals or because of toxicities that are not forming relationships with the life-giving chemistry mechanisms inside the cell. And suddenly she comes in and she says, here, take this frequency, take this note. You can record, I can hear them, you can't hear them, but do a voice profile. And then you have a computer that tells you the chart. Oh, this frequency from this body is missing. Just dial it in and give it to the person with a set of headphones or with a speaker system. Give that energy, that vibration back into the human body, and then see what happens. And then life springs back forward again, very, very similar to what happened in the Pacific Ocean in a period of just 3 weeks when the proper minerals are there, because minerals are the material substance of the sound frequencies of life. They represent that. They cause the harmonics inside the body that is definitely bioacoustics. And that's what Sherry Edwards' work is really all about, as I see it.
I have a question regarding attitude. What are your thoughts on heart mass, heart rate variability research, in terms of as a possible aid to adjusting attitude and getting more into a peaceful, regenerative state?
Well, if somebody has a really serious disease, and believe me, there's hardly anybody in the U.S. that's healthy. Almost everyone has a pair of glasses or dental cavities, and sometimes they're filled with mercury. They've had their vaccinations laced with all kinds of poisons. Very, very few people in the U.S. are healthy. And you look at the long-living cultures, those people are healthy. Now, that's real health. Nobody in the U.S. can compare to some. Even the Olympians have all kinds of different stuff that they're dealing with, aches and bruises and all. The long-lived people, their athletics were just fabulous, and their injuries would clear up almost instantly. They're amazing in comparison. But we have all these different techniques. We have drugs. We have different ways to start thinking properly again. We have vitamin supplements. We have herbal supplements. We have homeopathic remedies. We have drugs. We have all these different things that we're using to kind of shore ourselves up that, unfortunately, that might be state-of-the-art for one of the pillars, i.e., you were just talking about the fourth pillar. But unless we're doing all four pillars together, we're missing 75% of the equation. Yes, of course it'll help, but it's symptomatic. I graduated from high school one of the top biology minds in the country. I was in the top 3%. But my teachers only gave me like a B minus for incredibly unusual reasons. And when my AP scores came back in biology, my biology teacher went to find me because it was the last day of school. And he went to find me because he was horrified that the way that he was conducting his testing that caused me to get a low B was flawed. He came to his senses. Because here he had a student in the class that was in the top 3% in the country in biology. And he comes to me and he finds me. And he goes, "Johnny, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry." I said, "What are you sorry about? I like the guy. He was a good guy." He said, "Here's your scores in biology. You're in the top 3%. I missed it somehow. I was only..." He loved to give essay questions instead of multiple choice questions, for one thing. And no matter how I wrote those essay questions on biology about how things worked, no matter what I did, he never gave me more than a B minus. He had a prejudice against me. I was also a jock. I was a world-class swimmer. And he didn't like swimmers. He didn't like the fact that this private school had a bunch of great athletes, because his whole thing was academics. And I forgave him, and I thought about it for years, and I realized that I was different. I think causally. I don't like to treat downstream issues. I'll give you an example. I was lecturing in front of a group of professors, many of whom were from UCLA, and they were looking at the relationship between Lyme disease, mercury poisoning, and vaccinations in autistic children. It was an unusual combination. They were looking at Lyme disease along with the mercury and vaccinations that for other reasons can cause inflammation in the brain in autistic children. And they were all going to make their money with grants from the university studies that they were doing based upon certain key cytokines, growth factors in the body that related to inflammation that were way downstream from the cause. There's only four causes. And I had put together 120 slides from the peer-reviewed medical literature to lecture these professors, showing them that they were wasting everyone's time and money by treating to perfection one of the over 100 factors of inflammation in the brain. They were going to make their entire reputation on treating to perfection one of the 100 different chemicals that cause inflammation in the brain, and most of them are triggered when you've got Lyme disease in the brain plus a toxic metal like mercury. And I had to shake them up. I had to get them to think. I said, "Look, you've got four things right here, and if you treat those four things, all of those 100 downstream consequences disappear. They go away. You don't have to spend your whole career and getting your grant money based upon a new drug that you're developing to treat one of those elements. I don't think they all got it. They all heard what I said, especially when I showed them the peer review that supported 100% what I was saying. Did any of them do it? I don't think so. They want to develop a drug that they could make their career out of, livelihood, that treated one of those 100 things. Same thing with regeneration. You might have to perfection a pillar 4 technique, but if you don't do pillar 1, 2, and 3, you can forget it. You're still winding up. We have all these great doctors today and diets and vegans, you know, and all this stuff. Nobody's living past the age of 80 in perfect health, being treated by these fantastic medical methods today that are wonderful. Of course they get a 50-year-old to be healthier and get that 50-year-old to live in much better, higher quality of life until they're 80. Yes, they do that, and then that's it. That's not what I'm talking about. I say that's great. That all should be respected. I'm talking about taking the human being in the United States at as early age as possible, but starting with the adults right now, and getting them to live to 120 in perfect health. If somebody in Ikra, Greece, if somebody in Abkhazia, if somebody in Hunza land can do it, they've got two arms and two legs, no different than us. They show us the way. It would stop playing all these silly games and just start practicing that in our own homes, and then we use triggering mechanisms that enhance the speed of recovery to get our degenerate lineage of, you know, one generation after the next decaying. If we use the right bioacoustics and other forms of energy to get this harmonic going back into the human body again, we can do it. We can do it. So, yes, we have to have a very positive attitude. There are some great books out there written about the biology of belief is one well-known, and that's important. But that comes naturally when you're in an exuberant body that is expressing all kinds of energy. You just automatically you start having harmonic thinking. So you got to practice all four. Detoxification a certain way, and it's not difficult. Fitness a certain way, it's not difficult once you're feeling good enough and with the assistance of things like the bioacoustics. Eating properly, it's delicious. You can make them into smoothies and into great puddings and into great other dishes that are seasoned with all fresh herbs. Very, very delicious foods. And then the positive thinking, of course, how to meditate properly. Meditation in a very simple method, watching the air go up and down the nostrils, for example, feeling the bodily sensations as they are from the top of the head to the bottom of the toes, from the bottom of the toes to the top of the head. That's called Vipassana. Proper prayer and fasting. If you're from a Judeo-Christian background, it's in there. Proper fasting and proper eating and proper alignment with the Almighty. These are techniques that have been used for thousands of years that are in the fourth pillar. But today we're just not practicing very much. So if all four are done together on a regular daily basis, and that's what we teach in our seminars, and then we have the advantages of the bioacoustics to get us back to where we need to be quicker and with more energy and more vigor, it becomes a walk in the park. Otherwise, we can detoxify ourselves all we want, and we'll only get so far, and not very far. We can do lots of physical exercise. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, we are out of time. I want to make sure people know about your website, how to get in touch with you. We are looking now at essential links under drapsley.com, and under essential links, are all of the pillars that you talk about. I want to make sure people know about that. I want them to look at your university and what you're teaching other people. we need you to come back. There are so many wonderful comments about what you were saying and how much this is needed. We certainly need you to come back more often. I don't think we've had you back for a few months. And I want to thank you for all of the wonderful support that you have provided to Bioacoustics on your site and in this radio show.
Well, you're very welcome. It's always a great, great pleasure, and I'd love to be back anytime that you want.
I definitely want to see you. I'm excited for everything that you've said, and I know that there's an entire... I'm going to mention this, but we can't talk about it now because I know what will happen, is that I really want to have you back to talk about EMFs and electromagnetic pollution and all of, you know, all of that, because that's a whole other... I know that's an entire show, because I think that's also one of the things of these... longevity cultures that you've studied, is that they're not walking around with a, you know, EMF generating device strapped to their head all day long.
That's
so I'll
right.
just put
yeah.
that out as we'll get back to that.
Okay. All right. Good. All right, guys. Well, thank you again for having me on.
Thank you so much. That was a you know, I knew it was going to be fast, and it was. That was really stupendous. Thank you, Dr.
You're very
John.
Welcome. Yeah. Thank you so much again. Have a good one, guys.
You too. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Everybody else, have a great rest of the week, and we will see you on Tuesday. And we'll let you know when Dr. Apsley is coming back.
On Tuesday, we're going to be talking Direction for Truth, and we're going to be doing Obama's acceptance of Hillary as the next president and see what he really means. We're going to look at Hillary's acceptance speech. And I have a new joke for you that I'll tell you then. And we're going to be looking at Trump's acceptance speech and see where these guys are really coming from.
All right, on that toe tapper, everybody have a great rest of the weekend. Yikes. Wow. all right, everybody. We'll see you on Tuesday. Have a great weekend.